Eddie, the senior year. Chapter 7. Summer begins, part 1. With school over and done with, Kathy and Eddie have more time to plan their wedding, go to the beach, and have a little fun. The first order of business, however, is to have some fun. Wanting to go somewhere new, Kathy wonders whether there is a portal in the Florida Keys. Looking at a map of Florida, Kathy mentions to Eddie, "I wonder if there's a portal somewhere in the Florida Keys." Eddie replies, "Well, do you want to go and check it out?" Kathy replies, "Yeah, I do." Easily convinced, Eddie tells her, "So, let's go." Kathy asks, "Now?" Eddie replies, "Why not? What else are we going to do?" Kathy gets her beach stuff together, her map of the keys, and heads for her car. Eddie tells her, "You'll need your bicycle, hun." Kathy replies, "Oh, yeah. That's right. Silly me." Kathy gets her bicycle and rides to Eddie's house. Eddie gets to drive home. Eddie, however, is nice enough to carry Kathy's beach stuff in his car. Surprisingly, Kathy, riding her bicycle, beats Eddie to his house. Once they are at Eddie's house, Eddie gets his bicycle, and they head to the portal. At the portal, Kathy raises her right hand and states, "The Florida Keys, today." Sure enough, they find themselves in the Florida Keys, but have no idea where in the Keys they have landed. Kathy takes out her road map, trying to figure out where they are. Riding down the street, away from the ocean, Kathy quickly finds out that they are close to US Route 1, but then quickly realizes that US 1 goes from one end of the Keys to the other. With a little more work, they find out that they are in Key Largo, near John Pennekamp State Park. They note where the portal is, which is right off an unnamed road leading to US 1. Riding around for a while, Eddie and Kathy see a sign for scuba and snorkeling trips. They head down the road and find the place offering the trips to be right near the water. Kathy asks Eddie, "Do you want to go snorkeling?" Eddie replies, "Sure. You're my tour guide for today." After locking their bicycles, they go inside. Kathy gets tickets for the next boat out, which is in about 15 minutes, and comments, "Talk about perfect timing." They check out the shop for a few minutes, then hear the announcement telling the passengers for the next trip out to gather near the door to the dock. Scott, the snorkeling instructor and first mate, tells everyone, "You're all in luck today. Captain Mike actually showed up for work this morning. We went out earlier today, and he actually returned with everyone this time." First mate Scott then adds, "I'm only kidding. How many of you got worried?" A few people raise their hands, and Scott tells them, "There's nothing to worry about. We have a perfect safety record." First mate Scott adds, "And this is a 3-hour tour. We will have 2 hours in the water. If you need to buy sunscreen, go and do that now." First mate Scott then gives the passengers a quick tutorial on how to snorkel, and everyone heads out to the boat. On the way to the boat, Kathy tells Eddie, "Oh, wonderful. Aren't we in luck? A 3-hour tour." Eddie asks, "What's wrong with that?" Kathy asks Eddie, "Didn't you ever watch Gilligan's Island?" Not knowing what Kathy is talking about, Eddie replies, "What's Gilligan's Island?" Kathy replies, "It's a television show. Don't tell me you've never seen it." Surprised that she doesn't know, Eddie tells Kathy, "We don't have a television." Kathy is unusually silent for a moment. Thinking about this, Kathy tells him, "Oh, Eddie, I'm so sorry." Eddie tells Kathy, "Don't be. I probably wouldn't have watched it even if we had a TV anyway." Explaining herself further, Kathy tells Eddie, "No, it's not that. I've been going to your house for 4 years now, and I've forgotten that there was no television set in your house." Eddie tells Kathy, "Yeah, but you know I have a garden, tools, a gym, and 4 boxes buried in the backyard." Since it's time to board the boat, Kathy tells Eddie, "More about this later." On the way out, Captain Mike tells everyone what they will be seeing during today's trip. The captain explains, "We're going to be anchored next to a coral reef. Please do not touch the coral. Coral is a living organism, and if you step on it or bump into it, you can kill it or damage it. Near where we will be anchored is a statue of Jesus underwater. Be sure to take time and see it. First Mate Scott will point it out to you if he doesn't fall overboard on the way out." The captain explains the various type of fish they will see and assures everyone that the fish will not eat anyone. As they approach the coral reef, the captain announces, "If you take a look on the starboard side of the boat, which is on the right if you are facing the front, you will see a sunken ship at the bottom of the ocean. That's the ship of one of our competitors down the street. There are a few of their ships scattered around on the ocean floor that they've sunk over the years." Kathy asks Eddie, "Where else would a sunken ship be other than the bottom of the ocean?" The captain anchors the boat, and the first mate hands out masks and snorkels, and gives another short course on how to snorkel for those who didn't quite get it the first time. Eddie and Kathy get into the water and snorkel around, looking at the various coral formations. Eddie points out a barracuda to Kathy, which appears to stare right back at them. Swimming over the coral reef, they see dozens of types of fish, some out in the open grazing on algae growing on the reef, and some hiding in nooks and crannies. A little farther down, Kathy finds a stingray buried in the sand, but conspicuous enough to be seen. Swimming back to the main coral reef, Kathy spies a huge brain coral. A few feet away is a tiny brain coral. Kathy pokes Eddie in his side and points out to him the large brain coral. Kathy then points to her head, saying to Eddie that she has a large brain. Remembering that Eddie's brain is a little smaller than average, Kathy then points to the tiny brain coral and points to Eddie's head. Eddie quickly gets Kathy's inference and starts swimming after her. Eddie quickly catches Kathy and they surface. Kathy laughs and exclaims, "You got to admit, that was a good one." Eddie replies, "That's your funniest one yet, Katerina Karakova." Swimming back toward the boat, they search for the statue of Jesus and have a hard time finding it. Not being able to find the statue, they ask the captain, who is still on the boat, where the statue is. The captain tells them that it is about 200 feet away, pointing in the direction it can be found. Kathy and Eddie swim toward the statue, taking their time to look at the coral reef on the way. They find the statue of Jesus, holding his hands up in the water and looking toward the sky. Behind the statue is a lot of coral, teeming with fish. After 2 hours in the water, Kathy and Eddie are the last ones to get back on the boat. Some of the passengers got worn out after 20 or 30 minutes of snorkeling. They've been resting on the boat, watching the scenery. The captain takes a head count and heads back to the marina. One of the passengers asks, "What happens if someone's missing?" The captain, who perhaps should have been a comedian, replies, "It depends if anyone knows them or not. If no one knows them, we fudge the numbers. If someone knows them, we'll see if we can find them. If we can't find them, we stop to snorkel at another reef for a few more minutes, making sure that anyone who knows them doesn't make it back on the boat." Some of the passengers laugh, but some don't understand the captain's unusual sense of humor. On the way back, Eddie tells Kathy, "We have to go back. You left your brain on the bottom of the ocean." Kathy laughs and tells Eddie, "I really got you good with that one, buddy." Eddie tells Kathy, "Well, I'm smarter than you are." Kathy, who graduated summa cum laude, asks Eddie, "Hey now. How do you mean?" Eddie replies, "I'm marrying someone smart. You're marrying someone dumb. So, I'm smarter than you are." Kathy thinks about what Eddie said for a moment and tells him, "You're so sweet. And, by the way, you're not dumb." As the boat approaches the marina, the captain assures everyone, "I've docked a boat once before, so there's no need to worry. There are a few docks here. If I accidentally destroy one dock, we still have a few more I can use." The captain docks the boat perfectly and thanks everyone for allowing him to torture them with his bad jokes. As they leave the boat, the captain tells Eddie and Kathy, "You guys should get the gold medal. Not many people stay in the water for the full 2 hours." Kathy tells the captain, "Well, we had a lot of fun. Thank you." Eddie and Kathy get their bicycles and head off to find a place to eat. All the eateries seem to be on the main road or just off of it. They skip the chain restaurants, but take notice of how few fast food places there are in the area. Riding around for a while, they find a restaurant overlooking the water, so they decide to give it a try. They get a seat on the patio, fortunately at a table under an umbrella. With a beautiful view to the water, Eddie and Kathy look through the menu. Remembering from when they were at Lulu's Bra and Grill in Amelia Island, Kathy asks the waitress, "Is the shrimp caught fresh daily?" The waitress replies, "The shrimp came in a day or two ago, but the lobster came in this morning." Since there is no pizza on the menu, Kathy decides to get the lobster. Eddie goes with the lobster as well. While they are waiting for lunch to arrive, Kathy asks Eddie, "Would you rather live at the beach or in the woods?" Eddie replies, "I'll live wherever you are." Kathy replies, "Oh, that's so sweet. But really, if you had to choose, which would you pick?" Eddie replies, "The woods, definitely." Kathy asks, "Why?" Eddie replies, "Because I like the beach." Kathy asks, "Then why not live there?" Eddie explains, "Because if I live at the beach, then the beach is always there. Going to the beach is something special. If I'm there every day, it's no longer special. It's like when your dad drives your 914. To him, it's special, but you drive it every day. So, if you drove Paula's Jeep on the beach, that would be special to you." Kathy replies, "Yeah, that makes sense. I can see that." The lunchtime meal arrives, and Kathy is so happy that the waitress split open her lobster tail for her. Having a battle with a lobster tail is not on Kathy's list of things to do after snorkeling for 2 hours. Referring to her lobster, Eddie tells Kathy, "Hey, he looks like the lobster that we saw at the coral reef." Kathy asks, "How can you tell?" With Eddie slow to answer, Kathy exclaims, "Hey, I'm not falling for that." Eddie smiles and tells Kathy, "I almost got you back with that one." Kathy asks, "Got me back? For what?" Eddie replies, "The brain coral thing." They both laugh over Kathy's earlier teasing of Eddie. Changing the subject, Eddie asks, "So, do you have to practice track over the summer?" Kathy replies, "Yes and no. We don't have to go to practice, but I do have to stay in shape." Eddie mentions, "You know, McCrutchen could be going to your school. If his brother goes there, he might be going there too." Not too concerned, Kathy comments, "Scott McCutchen isn't very good. He's not on scholarship and runs high school times. I'm not even sure if he's returning next year." Eddie replies, "Neither one of them are very fast." While they are on the subject of track, Kathy mentions, "You know, Coach Herndon was asking where you and Mark were going to college. She was surprised to hear you guys aren't going to school anywhere. And Dr. Braun was asking the same questions." Convinced that college is not for him, Eddie replies, "Maybe they have the World Mechanics game somewhere. I can compete in that." Kathy informs Eddie, "Well, it's no secret that they want you and Mark to run for the university. They kept asking me and Paula about it." Not wanting to sound too uninterested, Eddie offers, "I'll run for the university, but I don't want to go to any classes, and I want all A's." Surprisingly, Kathy replies, "They just might go for that." Knowing that's not how it works in college, Eddie comments, "Yeah, right. I'd love to see that." Kathy reminds Eddie, "Yeah, but remember, you run a 9.2 second 100-yard dash. You have a lot more to offer than they do." Kathy informs Eddie, "So, there's a guy on the team, Daryl Stone, who's an awesome distance runner. He runs a 4-minute, 5-second mile. No one even really knows what year he's in. He's enrolled in the university, but he never goes to any classes. He takes these classes called special projects and independent studies. Eddie laughs hysterically and, barely getting the words out, tells Kathy, "The next thing you're going to tell me is they'll let me take classes at Angelo's service station while I'm working." Pumping gas 101. Major tune-ups 201. Oh, how about advanced service ticket writing 401? Laughing along with Eddie, Kathy reports, "But, seriously. That's what Stone does. He plays in a band, and they give him class credit for playing the drums. And they are giving him some sort of music degree to run track. But that's some sort of school secret. So you can't tell anyone." Eddie pays the bill, and they head out to find the portal. On the way out, Eddie asks Kathy, "So, how did you find this out about this Stone guy?" Kathy explains, "Coach Herndon wants you guys to run for the school. She told me about him, but she said it's a secret. Coach Herndon only told me about Stone so that I have something to persuade you with. I told her you weren't even remotely interested in going to college. She told me to talk to you over the summer about it. So, I did my duty. I talked to you about it. So, now I can tell her that I talked to you about it. And Paul is supposed to talk to Mark about it too." Eddie and Kathy find the portal, walk in, and are back to their own time and place. 2 weeks into the summer, Eddie begins working at Angelo's service station, putting in about 20 to 25 hours a week. Previously working 10 to 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, Angelo has been ready for some help for a while. Working 4 days a week, Eddie has time to work on the house and spend a lot of time with Kathy. Saturday morning is very busy at the station, so Angelo and Eddie both work during that time. One Saturday morning, Eddie is doing some routine maintenance on an automobile while Angelo is in the office writing up a service order. Eddie hears an argument in the office, wondering what the big deal is. Listening to part of the conversation, Eddie hears the customer explaining, "It clunks when I let up the clutch, and it doesn't start when it's hot outside. And there's a bad sound when I push down on the accelerator hard. So, how much will it cost to fix it?" Eddie hears Angelo explain, "I can't tell you how much it's going to cost just by listening to the engine. We'll have to take a look at it and see what's wrong." The customer asks, "Can't you just give me a ballpark figure on what it will cost?" The argument persists, and Eddie hears Angelo telling the customer, "Let's take it for a ride and see what all these sounds are." Angelo drives away with the customer to see what the customer is talking about. Listening to the engine as Angelo drives out with the customer, Eddie thinks to himself, what could be wrong with the customer's automobile? After all, Eddie might be working on it in a few minutes, since he is almost finished with the job he is working on. The first thing Eddie heard when Angelo drove away is that the clutch chatters badly, so the disc is probably warped and in need of replacement. The engine also doesn't sound very good, suggestive that it is in need of a tune-up. But it is an air-cooled engine, and air-cooled engines have a plethora of sounds coming from them even when they are working correctly. Finished with his job, Eddie pulls the car out of the bay and walks into the office to complete the paperwork. Eddie walks back to his service bay, putting a few things away before he starts his next repair job. Angelo drives back into the station with the customer, and they walk into the office. Angelo explains, "I can see four things going on here. First, your clutch is gone. There's absolutely no question about that. Second, your car badly needs a tune-up. Third, your engine has a mechanical problem. There's a bearing inside that sounds like it's been lubricated with valve grinding compound." The customer asks, "What's the fourth?" Angelo replies, "You. All you're concerned with is how much it will cost to fix. I can fix it, but you have a lot of stuff going on here. and none of it is going to fix itself. The customer asks, well, can you take a look at it? Angelo replies, sure. Eddie walks toward the office to get the service ticket and keys for his next repair. Opening the door, he sees Angelo in a discussion with the irate customer, who is none other than Mr. Crumb. Eddie thought he has seen the last of Mr. Crumb. Eddie ignores Mr. Crumb and goes about his business. Angelo interrupts Eddie, asking, hey Eddie, can you take a look at this guy's bug? See what you can find. Mr. Crumb, seeing Edward Bogenskaya now working as a mechanic, tells Angelo, I don't want him working on my car. Angelo tells Mr. Crumb, fine. Then fix it yourself. Sounding a bit like Mr. Zunday, Eddie interjects, Crumb, I can assure you there are no overdue library books here. And today is Saturday. No one is playing hooky and hiding out at the service station. So, why don't you go back to your pussy factory? Angelo asks, so, you guys know each other? Eddie replies, yeah. This is Mr. Crumb, the principal of the high school, who spent 4 years trying to suspend me. Angelo laughs, muttering, well, that explains a lot. Now I get the picture. Mr. Crumb walks out of the office and back to his car to drive away. Angelo and Eddie are both glad to get rid of Mr. Crumb, who poses nothing but a problem. Angelo does not have the time to deal with people like Mr. Crumb, and neither does Eddie. Angelo tells Eddie, that guy is a real pain in the ass. Eddie replies, yeah, tell me about it. Angelo explains, he always brings that piece of shit in here when it's about ready to seize up. Then, he expects me to pour some liquid Moran engine repair concentrate into the gas tank, and poof. The engine runs like new. And, get this. That engine only has something like 30,000 miles on it. And, I've already replaced the main bearings once. Eddie laughs, telling Angelo, well, maybe he won't be back. Angelo looks outside and replies, no such luck this time. Here he comes again. Mr. Crumb barges into the office, exclaiming, it doesn't start. Angelo tells Mr. Crumb, call a tow truck. Mr. Crumb asks Angelo, can't you take a look at it? Pointing to the car he is working on, Angelo explains to Mr. Crumb, look. I have to finish that Pantera by Monday, and I'm not coming in on Sunday. I've already looked at your car. You don't want Eddie to look at it, so call a tow truck. Mr. Crumb relents and tells Angelo, okay, okay, have him take a look at it. Eddie tells Mr. Crumb, give me your keys. Mr. Crumb hands over his keys to Eddie, hoping to get some answers. Mr. Crumb tries to follow Eddie outside, but Eddie doesn't want his company. Pointing to a chair, Eddie tells Mr. Crumb, sit there and wait. Eddie is now the boss. Mr. Crumb has to listen to Eddie or walk home. Eddie gets into the poorly maintained Volkswagen Beetle and cranks the engine, which does not start. Eddie notices the tachometer does not budge while he cranks the engine. Eddie reasons that there is a problem with the distributor, specifically with the points. Opening the engine compartment, Eddie removes the distributor cap. Finding the points are extremely worn, he makes a minor adjustment so he can get the car started. He then removes the air filter, which he suspects is filthy, finding out that he is correct. Eddie cranks the engine and pulls the car into the service bay. Mr. Crumb watches from his chair, surprised to see that Eddie might actually know what he is doing. Looking over the car, Eddie writes up a service ticket documenting what he finds to be wrong. Angelo comes over to see what Eddie has discovered, as Eddie is diagnosing his former principal's automobile. Eddie shows Angelo the service ticket, which suggests a major tune-up, replacing the clutch, and that there is a problem with the main bearings, or the connecting rod bearings. Eddie also makes a note that the Johnson rod needs to be replaced. Angelo looks over the ticket and is slightly puzzled. Angelo asks Eddie, what's a Johnson rod? Eddie explains, I totally made it up. That guy is so stupid, he'll believe it. Charge him a pain in the SV. Angelo repeats back to Eddie, the Johnson rod needs to be replaced. Yeah, that sounds good. I've got a few customers that are going to need a new Johnson rod the next time they come in. Angelo then tells Eddie, let's give him the report. We either fix it or boot him out of here. Every service station has those customers they wish would never drive in again. Mr. Crum is one of them. Angelo and Eddie walk back into the office. Eddie tells Mr. Crum, okay, I've looked it over. Your car seriously needs a tune-up. The points are extremely worn, and the air filter is badly clogged. You're down a quart of oil, and the little oil that's in there is filthy. Your clutch has to be replaced because the disc is warped. The bad news, however, is that either the main bearings or the connecting rod bearings are shot. That would require an engine rebuild. If we open it up, I suggest you replace all the bearings because, if one bearing is gone, the rest of them are probably right behind it. And you should have replaced your Johnson rod 15,000 miles ago. It looks really bad. Mr. Crum, the cheapskate that he is, asks, what's the least we can do to get it running again? Angelo informs Mr. Crum, the tune-up, oil change, and the Johnson rod. But, as Eddie said, your clutch needs to be replaced, and your bearings are shot. The bearings are why your engine sounds so rough. Mr. Crum asks Angelo, can you do the tune-up, oil change, and replace the Johnson rod now? Angelo replies, yeah. We can do that. Knowing that he has no choice, Mr. Crum gives the go-ahead for the repairs. Liking Eddie's unique and colorful form of bullshit, Angelo tells Eddie, let me make sure we have the right size Johnson rod in the back. Eddie tells Angelo, it's a 10mm with a 4mm bore. Angelo laughs, at least getting some amusement, and goes back to working on the Pantera. Eddie starts working on Mr. Crum's Beetle, trying to get rid of Mr. Crum and the car as fast as he can. Once Eddie is finished, Angelo settles up the bill with Mr. Crum. The car runs better now, but it still needs a clutch, and the bearings still need to be replaced. Angelo tells Mr. Crum, I gave you a deal on the Johnson rod. I only charged you $30. It should be twice that. Mr. Crum pays the bill and drives off with a tuned-up engine, new oil, and a brand new Johnson rod. Angelo and Eddie know he'll be back later, probably with either a seized-up engine or a clutch that is ground down to the rivets, in which case he will probably need a new flywheel as well. Angelo asks Eddie, how did you know he'd fall for the Johnson rod thing? Eddie explains, when I was in high school, Mr. Crum thought I used the school's auto shop to modify Kathy's Porsche. Angelo laughs and mentions, yeah, I remember when you told me about that. Eddie continues, so, we got into this big argument. Mr. Malik was there, so I made up a bunch of crap. I told Mr. Crum that I removed the Holley carburetors and put in high-performance Azalea carburetors. And I told him that I freon-cooled the ball joints and steering rack, and a bunch of other stuff. Oh, and I told him I put in stainless steel muffler bearings. He actually believed it all. Angelo laughs, telling Eddie, from now on, everyone who is a pain in the ass is getting a new Johnson rod. With much thanks to Eddie, Angelo has a new way to deal with irrational customers. Eddie asks Angelo, by the way, what's up with the Pantera? It looks new. Angelo replies, some guy named Harrison owns it. He's a teacher up at the high school. He wants it turbocharged and a few other performance enhancements. I'm almost done. Eddie exclaims, wow. Mr. Harrison. So, that's who owns that car. It showed up last spring at the high school. I was wondering who owned it. Angelo and Eddie get back to work, hoping not to see Mr. Crum anytime soon. While Eddie is working at Angelo's service station, Mark and Paula have been spending their spare time searching for their own house in the woods near where Eddie and Kathy bought theirs. Driving around in Paula's Jeep with the top down, they get a good panoramic view of the area. Mark and Paula have also made many trips to the bank, which is their new lingo for buying gold in the present, bringing it through the portal, and selling it at a future date for a profit. While they are in the future, they exchange any newer bills for older ones at Eddie's service station, bringing back a mountain of cash. Mark and Paula also open brokerage accounts, taking Eddie's advice on buying stocks that are guaranteed to go up in the future. Eddie, in the future, has been quite the aficionado of older bills, keeping a good stash of them in the safe he installed at the service station after he bought it from Angelo. In the future, Eddie has a few banks convinced that he is a collector of old bills. He even has the banks put the older bills aside for him, which they are glad to do. Truth is that the banks don't want the older bills anyway, which will be eventually taken out of circulation. On one of Mark and Paula's house hunting expeditions, Eddie and Kathy take a drive with them in Paula's Jeep as they meander around the town behind the school. With very few houses for sale, it's going to take a lot of work to find the right one. Since they all are curious, they find where Mr. Zunday lives, which is down the street and around the corner from Eddie and Kathy's place. Mr. Zunday has a nice house in the woods too, also with his own pool. Not finding much for sale, Kathy teases Paula, telling her, "Hey, I heard that there's a house for sale on 2nd Street. Maybe we can drive by and look." Paula frankly replies, "No. I'm not falling for that." Persisting with teasing Paula, Kathy tells her, "Who knows? Maybe the area will go commercial and you'll get rich." Paula makes a quick U-turn and Kathy asks, "Hey, did you see something?" Paula replies, "Nope. I'm taking you to 2nd Street, girl." Paula knows how much Kathy hates 2nd Street, so Paula decided to tease Kathy in return. Kathy tells Paula, "I was only teasing." As she pulls into a dead-end street to turn back around, Paula replies, "I know. But I got you good. No one is curious enough to take the trek all the way to 2nd Street." As Paula is turning around, Kathy exclaims, "No, wait." Paula asks, "For what?" Pointing down the street, Kathy tells Paula, "There's a for sale sign." Paula heads in the direction of the house and stops just beyond the sign. Kathy mentions, "That sign looks kind of old." Not able to see much, Paula drives up a bit farther. From the road, no one can see a house. Mark suggests, "Drive up the driveway a bit. Maybe we can see something." Paula asks Mark, "What? Drive down this gravel thing." Never losing his sense of humor, Mark replies, "It's either that or through the trees. You do have a Jeep. Take your pick." Paula decides to take the gravel driveway. As Paula drives down the gravel driveway, no one sees any sign of a home. 200 feet down the curvy gravel driveway, they come to a clearing, which is about 1 acre. Paula mentions, "I don't see a house." Mark replies, "That's because there ain't one. It looks like they are selling the land." They all get out of the Jeep and take a walk around. Eddie tells Mark, "It looks like a clean slate. You guys could build something yourself." Mark stares at the woods in all directions, thinking that Eddie is right. This would be a really nice place to build a house. Paula starts walking around, looking at the view in every direction. Kathy tells her, "This is a little better view than 2nd Street, don't you think?" Paula, envisioning the dilapidated haunted houses that Kathy described, replies, "Oh yeah. I'd say." Paula is slowly falling in love with the property. The problem is that there is no house on it. Kathy, who is in a mood today, comments, "I heard Mr. Crumb is moving in next door." Paula exclaims, "Stop it, girl," and starts chasing Kathy. Mark yells out, "Hey. We can put in a track if you want." Paula finally catches Kathy, tags her, telling her, "I won." Kathy replies, "I let you win." Paula replies, "Did not." Kathy replies, "Did so." Paula firmly replies, "Did not. I let you win." Kathy laughs and replies, "Yeah, right." Interrupting the girls' verbal exchange, Mark asks Paula, "So, what do you think?" Paula replies, "I like it. The problem is there's no house." Mark replies, "How is that a problem? We can build one. Like Eddie said, it's a clean slate." Paula asks Mark, "Can you build a house, like all by yourself?" Mark replies, "Well, almost. I can get some subcontractors, like to pour the foundation, and that sort of thing. Remember, this is my job now." Paula comments, "Oh, yeah. Duh. Silly me." Paula suddenly becomes excited because she will also have her house in the woods, and less than a mile away from Kathy and Eddie's house. Paula then asks Mark, "How much will it cost to build one?" Mark replies, "It depends on what you build." Interrupting Mark and Paula's conversation, Kathy tells them, "It doesn't matter. You just buy gold, bring it to the future and sell it. Then, when you come back, go down to the building supply place and buy whatever you need." Paula gives Kathy a high five and exclaims, "When am I finally going to get this through my head?" Eddie tells Mark what Kathy said would work. "You just pay cash for all the materials and pay the jobbers in cash." Mark replies, "Yeah. I finally got it. Now I see how we can do this." They head back to the road, and Paula writes down the information from the sign. Paula writes down the name of the street, which is Orchard Lane. Driving again to the end of the street, they find a cul-de-sac with a few houses at the end. Paula wonders why this property has never been built on. Kathy, who has driven around this town for months, tells her that there are a lot of undeveloped lots around, but they are not for sale. Paula speeds back to her house, wanting to call the real estate office now. Arriving at her house, Paula jumps out of her Jeep and runs toward the door as if she is running a 40-yard dash. Paula exclaims, "Aren't you guys coming?" Before anyone can respond, Paula is inside, headed to the phone. Mark, Eddie, and Kathy get out of the Jeep. On the way to the door, Kathy comments, "I think she's a little excited. What do you guys think?" Mark replies, "Maybe just a little." They go inside, and Paula is already on the phone, talking to the real estate office. Listening to Paula on the phone, Kathy comments, "Well, just listen to that. She talks faster than she runs." Eddie replies, "Yeah. She learned from you." Kathy asks, "How so?" Eddie explains, "I think I remember a long 5-minute run-on sentence when you explained to your dad how you just showed up one day with a Porsche 914 in front of your house." Kathy contends, "Yeah, well, that was more like 3 minutes. Eddie replies, "Uh-huh." Paula hangs up the phone and gives Mark all the details. She tells Mark that the property is 3 acres, and the owner lives in another state. She tells Mark the price and asks, "Can we get it, please, please, please?" Mark replies, "Sure. I can see us living there." Paula replies, "Oh, good. We have an appointment to sign the contract in an hour." Mark asks, "What if I said no?" Paula tells him, "Then, we'll be living on 2nd Street, next to Mr. Crumb." But Paula has enough money saved up to buy the property in the woods, so she is going for it. Not missing a beat, Mark comments, "You know, I could buy a house on 2nd Street. Then, I can knock the house down and store construction materials and crap that I rip out of jobs on the lot." Eddie replies, "That's a great idea. I can go in on it with you. I can store a few broken down automobiles." Kathy tells Eddie and Mark, that would usually be called a junkyard. Mark replies, "Exactly." Eddie comments, "Well, Mr. Crumb wanted the area to go commercial, didn't he? Some commercial enterprises, such as a junkyard, lower property values, not raise them. Mark and Paula head to the real estate office, and Eddie and Kathy head to their new house. Since it's nice outside, Eddie and Kathy are going for a swim. On the way, they stop by Mark and Paula's property and take a second look. Kathy tells Eddie, "It would be so nice to have them living only a mile away from us." Eddie replies, "Yeah, that place would be perfect for them." And Mark's going to build a separate 3 or 4 car garage to store all the tools he's going to accumulate in the next few years. Kathy asks, "How do you know?" Eddie replies, asking, "Do you remember when Mark and his father built that 8 car garage at the gardens last summer?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. That was a really big project." Eddie explains, "Mark said to me, if I can have a garage half this size, I'd be really happy." Kathy replies, "Well, they'll have the space for it, and a pool too." Arriving at their house, Kathy and Eddie head straight for their own pool. Relaxing in the water for a while, without even realizing it, Kathy and Eddie begin making plans for Mark and Paula's house. Kathy suggests to Eddie that Mark and Paula really need a pool. Eddie mentions that the house should be all on one level, and brick on all 4 sides. Kathy adds that Mark will really need a separate garage, just like Eddie has, for work. After their long discussion, Eddie and Kathy realize that they have planned Mark and Paula's house to be just like theirs. After an hour in the pool, planning for Mark and Paula, Kathy and Eddie head out to get dinner. With the summer in full swing, Kathy and Eddie have their own planning to do. They need to be planning for their wedding and realize that they haven't done much and need to get moving on it. Kathy, although she is very intelligent, has a very simplified view of the world. With Kathy, it's pick a date, get married, and live happily ever after. But they quickly realize that it's not quite that simple. Sitting at their poolside one day, Kathy randomly asks Eddie, "So, when are we getting married?" Eddie replies, "We have to pick a date." Getting a pad and a pen, Kathy begins writing everything down. Replying, "That's easy enough," Kathy writes "pick a date" on the top of the paper. She then asks, "Okay, then what?" Eddie replies, "We have to send out invitations." Writing that on the list, Kathy mentions, "Okay, that can be done immediately after we pick the date. But dang, we have to have the invitations printed. And if we're going to send out invitations, we'll need a guest list." Kathy comments, "This is really getting to be complicated." Eddie mentions, "We can go over to the card store. Maybe they already have wedding plans and a checklist already printed out." Kathy exclaims, "That's it. You're a genius." Eddie replies, "It's my little brain. It's less complicated." Not understanding why Eddie said that, Kathy asks, "How is that?" Eddie replies, "The brain coral. My little brain." Kathy laughs and asks Eddie, "Are you telling me that I'm complicated?" Eddie replies, "No. The wedding is complicated, and we're not." Thinking about what Eddie said, Kathy replies, "Yeah, you do have a point." Wanting to make at least some forward progress, Kathy and Eddie drive over to the card shop. They walk in and see an entire section with wedding invitations, thank you notes, and other wedding items. After a few minutes, the clerk, whose name is Nora, comes over and greets them, saying, "Let me guess, you're getting married." Kathy replies, "Yeah. How did you know?" Nora replies, "Because if you were looking for a birthday card, you probably wouldn't be spending 5 minutes looking at wedding invitations. And if you're like everyone else, you probably don't know where to start." Kathy tells Nora, "It sounds like you've had a few other people walk in who were getting married too." Nora smiles and replies, "One or two." Nora tells Kathy and Eddie, "If you want, I can make this a little easier for you." Kathy asks, "How?" Nora explains, "Well, let me ask you a few questions. Do you want to do everything yourself, or do you want a wedding planner?" Kathy replies, I don't even know what there is to do. We're like stuck. Nora hands Kathy a wedding checklist that is 2 pages long, which is a bit overwhelming. Kathy and Eddie look through the list, and Eddie comments, "Wow. No wonder everyone spends a year planning their wedding." Nora asks, "When were you thinking about getting married?" Kathy replies, "This summer." Nora informs Kathy, "Okay, dear. You got a problem here. You're going to need a wedding planner. There is no way you will ever get all of this done by yourself this summer." Kathy asks, "So, what exactly does a wedding planner do?" Seeing that Kathy has no clue where to begin, Nora explains, "A wedding planner can do as much or as little as you want. A wedding planner can plan and orchestrate your entire wedding for you, or they can do as little as make a few suggestions. For example, a wedding planner can take care of the flowers, get a photographer, hire the caterer for the reception, and have the wedding cake made and delivered. They can also find a band or a DJ for the music at the reception. And they'll make sure that the date will work for the person officiating the wedding, and that sort of thing. Or, a wedding planner can do as little as show up at the wedding and make sure everything runs smoothly." Looking at Eddie, Kathy tells him, "It sounds like we need a wedding planner." Telling Kathy and Eddie to have a seat, she explains to them, "When you hire a wedding planner, you'll still have a lot to do. You'll need to pick your wedding date, get a guest list together, buy your wedding rings, pick out a wedding dress, so you're not going to be sitting around doing nothing." Kathy tells Nora, "We were thinking about getting married on the beach." With some good news, Nora informs them, "That usually makes everything a lot simpler. Beach weddings are fun and really easy." Wanting to get started, Kathy asks, "Okay, how do we find a wedding planner?" Getting the business cards for the 3 wedding planners the card shop uses, Nora hands them to Kathy. Nora informs Kathy, "Any one of these wedding planners are good. If I were you, I'd call Jennifer first. She's been doing this the longest, and you guys have a tight deadline. And she's done a lot of beach weddings." Not realizing how complicated planning a wedding can be, Kathy tells Eddie, "Let's get a wedding planner." Eddie replies, "Yeah. I agree. That would be the easiest way." Nora instructs Kathy, "Okay, so the first thing you need to do is call Jennifer, and then start making your guest list. That's all you have to do right now. Jennifer will meet with you, ask you a lot of easy questions, and she'll take care of the rest. Don't worry. Everything will work out fine." Kathy and Eddie thank Nora, leaving the card shop a lot more confident than when they walked in. Eddie and Kathy head back to Kathy's house, where she wastes no time making the phone call to Jennifer. Eddie hears only half of the conversation, but can tell that Kathy is making a lot of progress. Kathy sets a date to meet with Jennifer, which is an afternoon that she and Eddie both have free. Of most importance, Jennifer tells Kathy to get her guest list together. After the call, Kathy feels a lot more confident that everything is now under control. With the ball now rolling on the wedding plans, it's back to real life for Eddie and Kathy. When Eddie decided to be a mechanic, he had a good idea of the types of automotive issues he'd be working on. Eddie expected to be doing a lot of tune-ups, brake jobs, valve adjustments, and an occasional engine rebuild. And then, there are those emergency repairs, such as alternators, water pumps, or fuel pumps that have gone bad. Occasionally, Eddie expected to work on some boring stuff, such as changing oil and replacing light bulbs. But every once in a while, the mind needs a rest. And at the opposite end of the spectrum, taxing the mind to its limit, are the intermittent electrical or fuel system problems that never seem to malfunction when the automobile is at the service station. But worst of all, is when the shade tree mechanic pushes the dead in the water automobile into the service station, partially disassembled with the parts in a box. Occasionally, the workday brings interesting problems with automobiles that Eddie never expected to see. The people that drive in with the interesting problems are equally, if not more, interesting than the problem with the automobile. Today, at the service station, another familiar face drives in with an issue that no other mechanic has been able to solve. The car is a 5-year-old Corvette, which has been poorly maintained, abused, and out of warranty. The driver is Paul Mahoney, who is another person Eddie was hoping to never see again. Fortunately, for Eddie, Angelo talks with Mahoney and writes the service ticket. Mahoney complains that the car sputters at times, but then it clears up for a while. Angelo tells Mahoney to call later this afternoon for a progress update. Eddie is in the middle of putting a lift kit on a Jeep CJ, and that's just for starters. The owner has an extensive list of custom enhancements he wants done to the Jeep, which will take Eddie quite a while. This means that Angelo will get the pleasure of working on Mahoney's Corvette. This time, Eddie is spared having to work on a car owned by someone who has caused him so much trouble in the past. After a while, Angelo starts diagnosing Mahoney's Corvette. Eddie yells out to Angelo, "Hey, the guy who owns that car is another loser." Angelo yells back, "Oh yeah. What's his story?" Eddie yells back, "Drugs. Lots of them. He's been in and out of a sanitarium." Angelo replies, "That will explain a lot. He probably spends his money on drugs instead of auto maintenance." Angelo continues to work on the Corvette, having a difficult time finding the problem. Eddie walks over and asks Angelo, who is still working feverishly on Mahoney's car, "So, what's wrong with it?" Angelo replies, "I don't know. Whatever it is, it's definitely in the fuel system." Eddie suggests, knowing Mahoney, someone probably put sugar in his gas tank. Angelo tells Eddie, "Yeah. I got it. Hey, thanks." Eddie asks, "For what?" Angelo replies, "I'm going to drain the gas tank, replace the fuel filter, fill it up, and flush out the fuel lines. Maybe I'll get lucky and it will run." Eddie mentions, "And while you're at it, replace his Johnson rod." The first roadblock Angelo encounters is the aftermarket locking gas cap. Not being provided with the key to the gas cap, Angelo picks the lock, which is really quite simple. Angelo removes the gas cap, which oddly has a string attached to the inside of the cap, which goes through to the tank. Thinking this is kind of unusual, Angelo initially thinks that maybe the string was put there so the gas cap wouldn't get lost. Angelo quickly reasons to himself that would be stupid. Pulling the string, quite a few small hermetically sealed bags of white powder tied to each other come out one by one. This is not exactly anything Angelo has ever seen before. Angelo yells out, "Hey, Eddie. Come and take a look at this." Eddie walks over, as Angelo is pulling who knows what out of Mahoney's gas tank. Eddie laughs and tells Angelo, "It looks like a tapeworm." Angelo asks, "What is this shit?" Eddie laughs and replies, "Knowing Mahoney, it's probably heroin or some other drug." Angelo finally pulls all the bags out of the gas tank, some of which have broken open. Angelo comments, "There's the problem. Whatever this shit is, it's in the gas. That's why no one could find it." Eddie suggests, "Maybe you should call the police in case it's drugs." Angelo agrees, clearly not wanting to be on the wrong end of this problem if it is drugs. Angelo calls the police, telling them that it is no rush, and that he just wants to have something looked at. While he is waiting, Angelo drains the gas tank, flushes the fuel lines, replaces the fuel filter, and the car starts and runs just fine. Angelo adds quite a bit of fuel system additive to the gas tank, which will clean out whatever may be left over in time. Angelo then cleans the carburetors with a spray-type carburetor cleaner. The car seems to start and run just fine. Angelo lets the engine run for a while, making sure the sputtering that was reported does not return. Since Angelo reported that it was a non-emergency, the police arrive an hour later. When the officers walk into the service bay, The senior officer, Officer Richard Hayes, says to Eddie, "Hey, you're the pizza girl's boyfriend." Eddie mentions, "Yeah. Me and the pizza girl are getting married. And Mark and the Jeep girl are also getting married." Richard then mentions to Eddie, "Oh, and by the way, thanks for taking care of Charles Blackfast last spring." Eddie replies, "No problem." After a short conversation, Richard then tells Eddie, "We got the call, but they were very vague about the complaint." Eddie replies, "Yeah. Let's go talk to Angelo." Eddie escorts the officers to the office, where Angelo is just finishing up with a customer. Once the customer leaves, Richard asks Angelo, "Hey, Angelo, what do you got going on here today?" Angelo replies, "Let me show you," as he walks outside to the idling Corvette. Convinced that the Corvette is now running properly, Angelo turns it off. Angelo explains, "I was working on this car. It had a fuel system problem, and I found it. Let me show you what it was." Angelo walks over to his service bay and, showing the officers what he found earlier, tells them, "Whatever this crap is was strung down into the gas tank. Some of the packages broke open, and it made a mess of the fuel system. Eddie thought it might be some sort of drugs." Richard takes a look at the packets, which are still strung together. He breaks one open, telling his partner, "It looks like heroin." Richard asks Angelo, "Whose car is this?" Angelo yells out to Eddie, asking, "Eddie, whose car is this again?" Eddie yells back, "It's Paul Mahoney's." Richard looks at his partner and tells him, "If it's Paul Mahoney's car, it's heroin all right." Richard asks Angelo, "When is he coming back for his car?" Angelo replies, "I haven't called him yet, but it's ready whenever he wants it." As Eddie walks over, Richard asks him, "Paul Mahoney? That was the guy who had a few problems several years ago in high school, wasn't it?" Eddie frankly replies, "That's the guy. He's the guy who ran down the street, acting crazy. That's when you first met Kathy, the pizza girl." Richard tells his partner and Angelo, "This will be Mahoney's word versus Angelo's. So, here's what I want to do. Angelo, you call Mahoney and tell him his car is ready. Get him to pay for it first so you get your money. And then show him what you found. If it's drugs, he'll take them with him. When he drives out, we'll pull him over for his expired tag," which Richard noticed when he wrote down the plate number in his notebook. Angelo replies, "Got it." Angelo calls Mahoney, who is sitting at home since he doesn't have a car to drive. Angelo explains to Mahoney that he found the problem, and the car is running fine now. Angelo tells him how much it cost, and Mahoney tells Angelo he'll be over in a half hour to pick it up. Angelo relays the information to Richard, who tells his partner to radio for a backup. The backup unit parks their vehicle behind Vinny's body shop and sits in Vinny's office waiting for Mahoney to show up. Richard, keeping in radio contact with the backup unit, drives up and down the street, as if he is on patrol. The plan is for Angelo to call Vinny to let the backup unit know whether Mahoney took the packages, and if he did, where in the car he stashed the goods. Chauffeured by his mother, Mahoney is dropped off at the service station. As Mahoney walks into the office, his mother drives away. Angelo explains to Mahoney, "Your fuel system had a problem. The fuel was contaminated. So, I cleaned your carburetors, flushed your fuel system, replaced the fuel filter, and put new gas in it." Mahoney pays the bill in cash. Looking over the bill, Mahoney asks, "What's this?" "A Johnson rod." Angelo explains, "It's part of the fuel pump. It looked pretty bad. I saved you some money by not replacing the whole assembly." Eddie, overhearing Angelo's conversation with Mahoney, lets his mind wander a bit. Angelo, having a distinct Greek accent, pronounces the word fuel as fool. Eddie cannot help but to visualize Mahoney as a fool, and a fool filter is used to filter out Mahoney. looking over at Mahoney in the office settling up the bill with Angelo, and visualizing what a full pump could be, Eddie starts laughing. Now that he has his money, Angelo then explains, the problem was a pile of packages that were strung down into your gas tank. Some of them broke open. Whatever that stuff is, it messed up the fuel system. That's why I had to replace your Johnson rod. That shit damaged the Johnson rod, and that's why it was running so rough. Pointing to the shop, Angelo tells Mahoney, the bags are in the shop if you want them back. I'll show you. Angelo gives Mahoney his keys, and Mahoney walks out to the shop following Angelo. Pointing to Mahoney's packages, Angelo tells Mahoney, there's your problem. Mahoney, seeing his packages sitting on top of a 55-gallon drum, picks them up and brings them to his car. After Mahoney drives off, Angelo phones Vinny and tells Vinny, tell the officer that Mahoney put the goods under the front floor mat on the passenger side. It doesn't take long for flashing blue lights to appear in Mahoney's rearview mirror. Mahoney floors his pedal, speeding away. Turning on his siren and lights, the other officer joins the chase, now with more cause to bring Mahoney in once they catch him. Mahoney now has two problems, an expired tag and evasion of an officer. No one speeds away, inviting officers to give chase for an expired tag. Once they find the dope, the officers will probably let Mahoney slide on the expired tag charge. Eddie and Angelo hear the sirens, which suddenly stop. Eddie comments, it sounds like they got him. Angelo tells Eddie, yeah. Richard's a good guy. He made sure we got paid before they busted him. Angelo adds, but I really feel bad for that Mahoney guy. Eddie tells Angelo, I wouldn't feel bad about it. If that was heroin, then you might have just saved his life, or someone else's. Angelo replies, yeah, you got that right. I never thought of it that way. Eddie also reminds Angelo, hey, and you fixed his car. That's what he came in for. Angelo replies, oh, yeah. That's right. Eddie and Angelo get back to work, not likely to see this type of problem driving into the service station ever again. The next day, Officer Richard Hayes, the officer who took the call yesterday, drops by to give Angelo and Eddie an update. They talk for a few minutes, and Richard thanks them for getting involved. Richard then informs Eddie and Angelo the packages were only the beginning. We searched his whole car and found a lot of drugs. So, we threw Mahoney in the tank overnight, and he started convulsing around 2 a.m. They shipped him off to the loony bin. He's apparently using. Eddie comments, I guess he hasn't learned yet. Richard tells Eddie, well, he's definitely learning something right now. Richard heads out, again thanking Angelo and Eddie for their help. Angelo and Eddie then get back to work. While Eddie's off working at Angelo's in the morning, Kathy and Paula again have their summer jobs working at the summer day camp where they have worked for the last 3 years. Like Eddie, Kathy also works in the mornings, giving Eddie and Kathy time in the afternoons to spend together. Working longer hours than Paula, Mark has been working with his father and picking up a few of his own jobs. In the afternoon, when Mark is still working, Paula heads to the bank every day, which is their new term for buying gold in the present, bringing it to the future, and selling it for a huge profit. Bringing the money back to the present, Paula is getting enough cash for her and Mark to begin building their house. After work, Paula often goes over to her and Mark's property, hammering steel rods into the ground showing where she wants the pool, house, and Mark's separate garage to be. Paula has an acre of cleared land to work with and doesn't want to cut down any more trees, thereby preserving the beautiful view. Like Eddie and Kathy's house, Paula does not want any drapes on the windows so she can take full advantage of the attractive view year-round. But Paula doesn't want anyone looking into the house, so she takes a few treks through the woods to see where the closest house is. If it were winter, this task would be a bit easier, since the leaves would be off the trees. Mark and Paula have also been looking through a lot of house plans and found one that they agree on. Paula orders the blueprints and when they arrive, she and Mark go to City Hall and apply for a building permit. That task was a lot easier than Paula expected. Paula somehow developed a fear of governmental paperwork when she applied for her learner's permit years ago. Now that Mark has the building permit, he can begin building their house. One afternoon, Paula and Mark show Eddie and Kathy their site plan. Kathy likes what Paula has laid out, with the garage facing the side of the house, and Mark separate detached garage 50 feet away. The pool is in the backyard, behind what will be a large patio. Eddie asks Mark where he plans to drill his well. Mark, who was unaware that there was no city water, has not planned for a well. Eddie and Mark find a suitable location, as far away as possible from the location of the septic tank. With the plans set, Mark can now begin work. Kathy and Eddie are also busy with life this summer. They meet with Jennifer, the wedding planner, in a private room at the card shop. Kathy has her guest list, as best as she was able to do. Jennifer goes over a few things and asks Kathy and Eddie a lot of questions. Taking a lot of notes, Jennifer comments, "It sounds like your wedding is going to be really easy." Quite surprised, Kathy asks, "Easy?" Jennifer assures Kathy, "Beach weddings are easy. The cathedral weddings with 1,000 people and a reception 5 miles from the church are the ones that pose a bit of a challenge. With 1,000 people, somebody is going to make a scene." Jennifer adds, "To be honest, beach weddings are really a lot of fun." That was certainly good for Kathy and Eddie to hear. Kathy tells Jennifer that they've decided on August 14th for the wedding date, but they can do it a week earlier or later if that's a problem. Jennifer assures Kathy that it is doable, especially with a beach wedding. Jennifer tells Kathy that reserving a spot on the beach is no problem at all. Familiar with the beach, Jennifer informs Kathy that there is a reception hall near the parking lot where the pool is located. Eddie and Kathy know this area of the beach really well, for it is their summertime hangout. Jennifer makes a quick phone call, finding out that the reception hall is available on August 14th. She whispers to Kathy and Eddie, "The 14th is available. Should I reserve it?" Kathy and Eddie both reply, "Yes." Jennifer reserves the reception hall for the morning and afternoon of August 14th, and the date is set. During today's meeting, Kathy, Eddie, and Jennifer also talk about the guest list and invitations. Jennifer tells them that she will send out the invitations, and if there is anyone else that is to be added, to let her know. Jennifer also tells them that she will take care of getting the area reserved on the beach, hiring a photographer, a florist, and a DJ. Kathy makes it a point to tell Jennifer that they want the ceremony on the beach near the sand dunes, east of the concession area. Jennifer has Eddie and Kathy sign a power of attorney, which allows Jennifer to obtain their wedding license. Eddie suggests to Jennifer, "There's a wedding photographer next to where I work. The place is called Emily's Studio." Emily comes into the service station to buy her gas. She seems like a really nice person. "Can we use her for our photographer?" Jennifer replies, "You sure can. We've used Emily for years. And you'll be happy to know that she's the best wedding photographer in the area." Eddie and Kathy were certainly glad to hear that bit of good news. The meeting then comes to discussing the menu for the reception. Jennifer asks Kathy and Eddie, "Have you given any thought as to what kind of food you want for your reception?" Kathy replies, "I guess we can't have pizza." Jennifer informs Kathy, "I've done a few weddings where there was pizza available at the reception." Kathy replies, "Okay. Pizza." Then, answering Jennifer's original question, Kathy adds, "But I guess we have to get normal wedding food too." Jennifer hands Kathy and Eddie a packet in a check-the-box format and tells them, "This list has the normal wedding food suggestions, complete with pictures. You can check off what you want and bring it back here later this week, and I'll pick it up. And there's a section for wedding cakes. You can pick one out or have your own made. Nothing could have been easier for Kathy and Eddie. Jennifer then tells Kathy and Eddie, okay, so now here's what you guys need to do. You need to pick out and buy your wedding rings, pick out your wedding dress, and get your bridesmaids and groomsmen together. And you need to find a minister to marry you. If you don't have one, or the date is not good for him, don't let it worry you. I can take care of that too. Oh, and give me a list of all the songs you want to be played at your reception. Kathy comments, wow. We get the easy part. Jennifer tells Kathy and Eddie, this is your wedding. You don't want to look back and remember it being a hectic and frustrating time. Don't worry. I'll take care of everything. Eddie mentions, I wonder if Paula will let us drive away in her Jeep. Kathy exclaims, that's a great idea. Jennifer mentions, that would be a really nice way to leave the ceremony and head to the reception hall. It sure beats walking along the sand in a wedding dress. You'll also be happy to know that we have someone with a dune buggy, with a trailer hitch, who carries the chairs, the podium, the tent, and everything else out to the beach. He can also drive you to the reception hall. Kathy comments, it looks like you got everything covered. Jennifer smiles and assures Kathy, that's what I do. Kathy and Eddie walk away, leaving everything in the hands of Jennifer, much more confident that their wedding will go well. On the way to the car, Kathy tells Eddie, we got the fun part. Picking out rings and a dress. That I can do. Eddie mentions, it sounds like Jennifer has everything under control. Kathy gives Eddie a high five, exclaiming, yeah, buddy. And we have a date. August 14th. Kathy's stress just totally disappeared, and they'll undoubtedly enjoy the rest of their summer a lot more.